All right, we're continuing our class on the Bible timeline of the Bible, and I hope to finish 1 Samuel today, and by that, finishing up the end of Saul's reign. Now, there's some interesting things. All right, we are on the last page. Last week, we talked about the death of Samuel, and that takes place in 2nd to last page. That takes place in 1 Samuel chapter 25 and verse 1, and this is after David is on the run. David is on the run after he is, after Saul has been chasing him. Saul and David had called a truce because Saul realized that David was not out to get him, out to get Saul. So he did that by going into a cave, and David had the perfect opportunity to kill Saul, and he did not. Later on, we'll see he has another opportunity to kill Saul, but he does not. And they show it shows that this is a continued thing, that he is consistent in his thought on this, and that's a good thing. Right after that, I have that Mephibosheth is born. Do we remember? I've mentioned him when we first started talking about Saul's timeline. Do we remember who Mephibosheth is?
He's Jonathan's son, the cripple.
Yes, Jonathan's son. He was crippled at some point, and I have that he's born at around this time. He's about 5 years old when Saul dies, and so, again, it's kind of a guess. I'm guessing that the time that David is on the run is less than 5 years, and that Mephibosheth is born after that, but again, I can't say for certain on those things, so we can place these things in a certain order. But that is recorded. His age is recorded in 2 Samuel chapter 4 and verse 4, and that's why I have a little CF. Here's a note saying, hey, this is where this particular thing occurred, and that's why I'm placing it in this general area. After that, after Samuel dies, and there are a couple gaps here in time, and that's why one of the reasons why I place Mephibosheth being born here is because there are a couple of gaps in time, I think, in chapters 25 and 26, and then 27, sort of. So I'm going to, that's why I've put things in this particular way. We have in chapter 25... the incident with Nabal and Abigail and David. Do you remember what that's about?
David requested help from Nabal that he didn't get. His wife tried to help, but anyhow, she appeased David to not take her old man out. He was a nasty old human being, I guess is the word for it.
His name means fool. And at some point, Abigail says, you know, Nabal is his name and he is full of folly. That's something that she says at some point, trying to get David not to harm her family. And that's exactly what happens. So Nabal insults David at this time. David asks for help. Nabal insults him. And David is upset and is set and ready to kill every male in Nabal's family. And so Abigail comes and says, look, please don't do this. Appeases him, as you say. And David is like, thank you for calming me down. This is great. Thank you for doing this. And then later, 10 days later, according to the passage, well, first, David tells Abigail tells Nabal what happened, and his heart got stone cold, is what it says there. So he must have realized how close to death he came. And then Nabal dies 10 days later of natural causes. And so the Lord is credited with that, as well he should be. And David is like, well, thank you for doing this, Lord, you know, for not causing me or allowing me to sin in this particular thing, or to take out vengeance upon him. You have done this for me. And so that's something that occurs in that particular passage. We see in this passage also that Abigail, being a widow, that David marries Abigail. We also see another woman that he marries, Ahinoam. And we see in the last verse of chapter 25 that Michal, Saul's daughter, had been given to another man named Paltai. We see some after effects of that in 2 Samuel 2, I think. 2 or 3, somewhere in that area. In the first 5 chapters. All right. Now, on my timeline here, I have 3 untimable events. And I think I've talked about 2 of them already. We talked about the tabernacle being moved. And it's mentioned in several places that the tabernacle is moved in different locations. I've placed one of those moving from Shiloh to Nob during the chapter 14, where we see a big gap of time toward the end of chapter 14. And then after Saul has the priests killed in Nob, that the tabernacle is moved some between that point and 1 Chronicles 21, 2 Samuel 24, it has been moved to Gibeon. And so the reason why I place it during Saul's reign is because what is Gibeon? Gibeon is in the territory of Benjamin. And it's one of the power bases for Saul. And so I think that out of Saul's paranoia, perhaps, after the priests help David, that he moves it closer to his power base so that he can control that aspect of it a little bit better. But the high priest at the time, Abiathar, is with David. He's traveling with David at this time, and we can see this at some point a little bit later on. So even if he has the tabernacle, the high priest is with David. And the Ark of the Covenant is remaining in Kirjath-Jearim, and will until 2 Samuel 6. We see, and I think I mentioned already, Nahash, king of the Ammonites, showing kindness to David. We see in 2 Samuel chapter 10 and verse 2 that he shows some kindness to David prior to that event. And I don't place it during David's reign because David is at war with Ammon through much of it. And so I think that it's more likely that it was some kind of kindness during Saul's reign while David was on the run. Again, speculation, but I just want to point out that there was some kind of kindness that Nahash showed him. And then also, Saul kills the Gibeonites. Let's turn to that one. Let's turn to 2 Samuel 21 and verse 1, because I don't think we haven't talked about that one yet. Who were the Gibeonites? Do you remember? All the way back to Joshua chapter 9.
They lived in the land of Canaan. They were pagans.
Yes, they lived in the land of Canaan. They were pagans. Now, was Israel supposed to kill the Gibeonites? Yes, initially. But what happens? Why don't they?
They tricked the Israelites into making a deal with them.
They tricked the Israelites into making a deal with them, into making a treaty. If you remember in Joshua chapter 9, they're high off of the battle with Jericho, with Ai, and in chapter 9, the Gibeonites realize, well, we're next on the list. We're going to try to trick Israel into making a treaty with us so that we aren't killed. And so they do that. They have moldy bread, they have old clothes, and they show up on Israel's doorstep in front of Joshua and says, hey, we're from a far country, we've heard about these things, look at our bread, look at our clothes, we've traveled from a far away, we're not from this area, will you have a treaty with us? And so Joshua, before, not even consulting the Lord, he doesn't consult the Lord in this instance, he makes a treaty with the Gibeonites, and he is expected to honor that. But when the ruse is exposed, he makes them into servants. The Gibeonites are turned into servants and serve the Israelites. And we see the result of, in 2 Samuel 21, we see the result of going back on that treaty. Let's look at verse 1. Whoever has that, please read.
Now there was a famine in the land of David for 3 years, year after year. And David inquired of the Lord. And the Lord answered, it is because of Saul and his bloodthirsty house, because he killed the Gibeonites.
All right, so this particular instance, this famine, takes place in David's time. It's a 3-year famine. And it's a result of what happened during Saul's time. So at some point in Saul's reign, Saul kills the Gibeonites. And go ahead and read verse 2.
So the king called the Gibeonites and spoke to them. Now the Gibeonites were not of the children of Israel, but of the remnant of the Amorites. The children of Israel had sworn protection to them, but Saul had sought to kill them in his zeal for the children of Israel and Judah.
All right, so this is in his zeal for the children of Israel and Judah. So there are two possibilities, I think, of where this could be placed. Again, this could be placed in the gap that's talked about in 1 Samuel 14 towards the end, where he goes into the different battles with different people. And that's when he was at his most zealous for the Lord, I think, in serving him. Now, there are some instances where he didn't in chapter 13 and definitely in chapter 15, but I think that's a good place to put that. Another place is here, where we see this gap here in between chapter 25 and 26. And it is, I think there are different possibilities for that. One of the reasons is perhaps he feels sad that he can't get to David. And so in this particular time period, he goes a little mad, he goes a little crazy, and decides to have the Gibeonites killed. Again, that is pure speculation, and I want to make sure that you're aware of whenever I make speculation, so that you know that it's my opinion and not necessarily hard and fast. But that's a possibility, and we have that. I have that placed here, and we see the after effects long after the fact. And here's a lesson to take from this. It had been years since this particular thing happened. Does sin have an effect on other people besides yourself?
Absolutely.
It sure does. And sometimes that effect can last years, can last decades. Even if you at some point decide to obey the gospel and become a Christian, the effects of that sin can still haunt you long after that. And so what we need to do, hopefully we can forgive ourselves of our sin. If the Lord has forgiven us, hopefully we can forgive ourselves. Sometimes I think that's the hardest thing to do, is if we've sinned, to forgive ourselves of that sin if we know what we did was wrong. But other times it's, we also have to recognize that our sin is something that we are always going to have to deal with the effects of, in terms of physical consequences. For instance, somebody in prison, right? He's dealing with the sentence that that was carried out. If he is converted in jail, his sentence doesn't get commuted. He still has to carry it out. Now, he might get out a little earlier for good behavior if he's acting as a Christian, but it's still something to consider. We still have to deal with the effects. And we see that also in David's reign when we get there after chapter 11 of 2 Samuel. We see quite a few negative effects of not just the death of his son with Bathsheba, the first one. We see plenty of effects after that. And we'll get to that when we get to David's reign. All right, chapter 26 of 1 Samuel. We see that Saul gets it into his head to chase David again. Now, David played it smart after chapter 24, and he did not go back to Saul's court. He said, it's too dangerous there. I am going to do my own thing for a while. And so he did, and that's what we see with Nabal and Abigail. And then we see here in chapter 26, he is with the Ziphites in the wilderness of Ziph. And the Ziphites decide, hey, they tell Saul, hey, David is here with us, why don't you do something? Well, I have on here a marker for a particular psalm, Psalm 54. I don't remember if we talked about that last time, but let's flip over. Hold your spot here. Flip over to Psalm 54. Whoever's got that, read the inscription, if you will.
To the chief musician with stringed instruments, a contemplation of David when the Ziphites went and said to Saul, is David not hiding with us?
All right, this is something that actually happens twice. The Ziphites betrayed David in two instances. And it could have been in the first time when David is actively running away from Saul, or it could be in this instance after they had already called a truce. I place it here after they had called a truce because David might have a sense of safety from Saul during this time, and the act of betrayal is even greater in this instance. It's, again, an opinion, but I think it's just slightly more likely to be here than in the earlier one. All right, so he betrays David, or the Ziphites betrayed David at this time, and the whole army of Saul falls under a deep sleep, and the Lord caused this deep sleep to happen upon them. And essentially, again, gives David this opportunity, this second opportunity to kill David without any trouble, or to kill Saul without any trouble. And so we see that he and Abishai go down into the camp while they're sleeping, and Saul is right there. And he doesn't kill him. Instead, last time he cut off a piece of his robe. This time he takes a water jug and a spear and goes off someplace else, calls out, wakes up Abner. Who is Abner?
His main military man.
Right, the commander of Saul's army and Saul's uncle. And so we see in this case that David calls out to Abner and says, you should be put to death for this. You have allowed your king, the Lord's anointed, to fall into danger. Now, Abner doesn't get killed in this particular instance, but we do see that David had this perfect opportunity. And so at the end of this, Saul implores David to come back to the court. Does Saul comply? Does Saul go with him? Or does David go with Saul? You remember? Not at all. He says, look, we've had a truce, and he came after me the second time. My life is in danger. I will seek refuge with the Philistines. And that's what we see in chapter 27. And that's right here. David defects to the Philistines. Now, this isn't a true defection. He is just seeking refuge with them. It's a pretty interesting situation. He goes, and I have on here the first seven verses. He stays in with the Philistines for a year and 4 months. He stays with them for 16 months at this Achish, the king of Gath, and he says, you know, you don't want me here with the lords of the Philistines. Why don't I go out into the country, and I can go in this other area that's held by the Philistines called Ziklag. And so he stays there in Ziklag for a year and 16 months. So that's where he stays. And during this time, he goes out and goes to battle for himself, for the Lord. And he goes out and he goes against, let's see, in verse 8, he goes against the Geshurites, the Girzites, the Amalekites. He goes as far as Egypt. But that's not what he tells Achish. He tells Achish, I have gone up against lands that belong to Judah. Against the southern area of Judah, verse 10, or against the southern area of the Jerahmeelites, or against the southern area of the Kenites. And these are all areas that are loyal to Israel. And so Achish is like, well, he's doing this, so he must be on our side. Now, in order to keep his secret, he kills every person in the villages that he conquers. In verse 8, among the Geshurites, the Girzites, and the Amalekites. Now, these are enemies of the Lord, and so he was likely told to do this, and perhaps this is a continuation of what should be done that was commanded in the time of Joshua. Do you remember the command in the time of Joshua? And a continuation of that command in the time of the judges? They did not kill everybody that they should have, who were bringing judgment upon the Canaanites. Yes.
They were supposed to go in the village and kill everybody that was in there, and they didn't do that. Every animal and stuff.
I think you're thinking of the Amalekites, and that's true. Saul was supposed to do that in 1 Samuel 15, but he did not. And so this is sort of a continuation of that, of what David is doing here in 1 Samuel 27, continuing this mission that the Lord had given all the way back in Joshua's time. So that's the indication that I think is happening here. I also have some men who join in the timeline, some men who join David and Ziklag in 1 Chronicles chapter 12, verses 1 through 7. And so I place that in here because the first verse says this is what happened in Ziklag. People came to David and while he was in Ziklag, and so I place that here. While he's here for 16 months, some of the Israelites come and join him. I also have a note there. Going back to David's mighty men, there is an instance where Benaiah kills a huge Egyptian. And it was talked about and played up quite a bit in 2 Samuel 23 and 1 Chronicles 10. Or excuse me, 11. And so they are, he had killed an Egyptian, so I'm placing that. One of the possibilities of placing that is here, because it says specifically in verse 8, and the last part, as you go to shore, even as far as the land of Egypt. So he goes up to the land of Egypt, so that's a possibility where he kills, Benaiah kills, the son of Jehoiada kills the Egyptian. So that's a possibility there. Again, placing the events of David's mighty men is very difficult, because they don't have much in the way of timestamps. All right. Before we go to this next section, David's campaigns with Achish while he's on appearance aligned with the Philistines, the latter half of chapter 27. Do we have any questions before we go on to the final battle for Saul. All right. This part is a little bit out of order in terms of what's written in the narrative. We have chapter 28, 29, 30, and 31. I flip 31 and 30. And there's a reason for that, and I hope that we'll be able to get to that today. So in chapter 28, the Philistines gear up for battle. And they gear up for battle against the Israelites. And the Israelites are, well, David joins ranks with them and says, all right, I'm going to join ranks with the Philistines during this time. Well, at the same time, we see some things that Saul had done. And David, Sam talked about this on Wednesday, that Saul had consulted a medium, the Witch of Endor. He tries his best to find, to get a message from the Lord. What should I do? What should I do? None of the prophets would listen to him. The Urim and Thummim wouldn't do anything. He wouldn't answer him by dreams in any way. 28 verse 6. He inquired of the Lord, but the Lord wouldn't answer him. Why do you suppose the Lord wouldn't answer him?
Samuel had told him that the Lord was taking the kingship away from him because of his actions. In fact, he's doing the very same thing here he did at the very beginning. He waited for Samuel back with the Amalekites, right? He waited for Samuel and waited for Samuel, and then he gave up waiting for Samuel and did his own thing. And here he's trying to do what he was told, trying to look, but then he gives up and does his own thing. And that's kind of a character trait.
Yeah.
He's not patient.
Pardon?
He's not patient.
He's not patient. That's evident in 1 Samuel 13, where he doesn't wait for Samuel before making a sacrifice. And in this particular instance, you're right. He's not patient. He is wanting to do his own thing. Part of it is sometimes the Lord does things, and we can see this in Scripture, because he wants a particular outcome to occur. He wants someone to be killed. He wants someone to be judged. We see that Josiah, later on in 2 Kings, he is killed because he didn't want, because Josiah is a righteous king, and Josiah's father, Manasseh, did such terrible things that he wanted to judge Judah, the southern kingdom. And so Josiah is killed before that judgment comes. And that judgment comes fairly quickly after Josiah is killed. So sometimes that occurs as well. God probably wanted Saul to be killed in this instance. And we see this exactly happen. He consults a medium. Who does he bring up?
Samuel.
Now, as I mentioned last week, Samuel's death is mentioned again in 28:3. And that is a reminder of the fact, hey, Samuel is dead. D-E-D, dead. Right? He is not coming back, and yet here is this situation where Saul consults this medium, this witch. Who is the one who brought up Samuel?
She was kind of surprised.
Yes, and I wanted to point this out because I'm not sure that was explicitly mentioned Wednesday, but I just want to make sure that we're clear on this. The witch didn't do anything. We can see in verses 10 through 12. And Saul swore to her by the Lord, saying, as the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing. Because Saul had kicked out all of the mediums and witches, either that or killed them. And so that's something that we see here in this case. I don't have that in the timeline because I'm pretty sure, I feel like that's probably toward the beginning of the reign, and we're that may have happened right as he became king. So the witch here, the medium, is scared for her life because, hey, Saul has done this. Saul has come, but Saul's come in disguise. So he can't, she doesn't recognize him right away. And so he asks for her to bring up Samuel. And then in verse 11, then the woman said, "Whom shall I bring up for you?" And he said, "Bring up Samuel for me." When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. As Sam said, she was surprised. If she knew what she was doing, if she were legitimate, do you think she'd have been surprised that Samuel came up? No, I don't think so. She cried out with a loud voice, and the woman spoke to Saul, saying, "Why have you deceived me? For you are Saul." And that kind of proves that God is the one who brought this up. How else could this man have been brought up from the dead, his spirit brought up, unless this was someone who was from God? Now, Saul, of course, is not from God at this instance, but the witch doesn't really know that, I don't think. All right, so some interesting things are mentioned in this case as well. In verse 19, Samuel tells Saul how he is going to die, when he is going to die. And this is why I placed chapter 31 before chapter 30. This and the first verse of chapter 30. "Moreover, the Lord will also deliver Israel with you into the hand of the Philistines. And tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. The Lord will also deliver the army of Israel into the hand of the Philistines." So this is something that's going to happen the next day. After he consults the medium, the next day this is going to happen. Okay? And then in chapter 30, verse 1, "Now it happened when David and his men came to Ziklag on the third day." So some stuff happens, and then the third day after that, he goes to Ziklag and realizes that his place had been raided. So we'll get to that and work up to that in just a second. So that's why I placed chapter 30 after chapter 31. Yes?
Curious. Said you will be with me.
Yes.
You and your sons will be with me. Can you expound on that a little bit?
You and your sons will be with me. Well, like we talked about on Wednesday, we saw looking at the what happens after death in Luke chapter 16 with the rich man and Lazarus. We see that Lazarus, the righteous man, goes to Abraham's bosom, also called paradise, and the rich man goes to torments. Now, I think it's safe to say Samuel went to Abraham's bosom. And it's very likely, I think, that Jonathan, when he gets killed in chapter 31, also goes to paradise, goes to Abraham's bosom. Saul, uncertain. Saul and his other sons, uncertain where they go. I know nothing of his other sons except for Jonathan and Ishbosheth, which isn't killed in this case. Although Ishbosheth is called a righteous man later on. So we'll see. So we don't know about Saul's other sons. Saul, on the other hand, did he go to torments or did he go to paradise? I'm not sure I can say specifically. Probably torments. But with me, they were able to converse. The rich man and Lazarus were able to converse, and in that sense, they're with each other. Or perhaps it could be referring to Sheol. They're all together in the grave.
I think that's the last point that we can be sure about, is he's in the grave, and
yeah.
He says, "You're going to be with me." So he's basically saying, "You're dying tomorrow.
Right.
You're going to be with me." Wherever they end up, in what part, and what judgments are obviously not stated.
Right. So for certain, Sheol, death, grave, Hades, to that effect. Yes. Did you have more?
Well, Saul actually committed suicide.
Yes. He did end up doing that. That's right.
You know, people use this to justify suicide. Mm. They do. I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
People try to justify all kinds of things.
Yeah.
and suicide is a much deeper topic.
It is. And we certainly won't have time to finish this up if we diverge into that. But
there's no bottom to it.
There isn't. And people can, it is possible for some, I can see where someone would try to justify suicide in this way. But this is sort of a specific case where he is, will he try to face this? Well, I'm not going to get into that. It's too deep. I'm going to dig myself into a hole if I keep talking. All right, so great question. We can probably come back to that some other time. All right, but bottom line, don't commit suicide.
Well, in a nutshell, suicide's murder.
Yes, yes.
And you're not supposed to murder.
Exactly. So
it simplifies it.
Yes, it does. All right, so in 1 Chronicles 12, we see a few verses there, 19 and 20, that a few people, some Manassites, people from the tribe of Manasseh, join David while he is about to go up into battle with Saul as part of the Philistines. So here's what's happening. The Philistines go up to battle against Saul, against Israel. David joins them because he is allied with the Philistines at this time. Some Manassites join David during this forming up, during this gathering together for this particular battle. And then in chapter 29, we see that the Philistines are like, "What is David doing here?" Achish is totally on board with David. He's bought his deception, so to speak, hook, line, and sinker. But the other lords of the Philistines are like, "What is David doing here? This isn't right. He is going to defect again. He is going to go against us during this battle. So he can't go into battle with us in this way. He'll come up behind us and destroy us." So Achish bows to their council and says, "Okay, you go back home and we'll do this battle ourselves. You're a great warrior, David, you and your mighty men, but we're going to do this ourselves." And so David goes back home to Ziklag at this time, to his home base at this time. And he sees that the Amalekites had raided Ziklag, taken all their wives, taken all their possessions and things of that effect. And that's chapter 30. But again, that's on the third day. That's a few days later. Whereas tomorrow, we see that Saul was going to die. And so I jump to chapter 31 after chapter 29. And this is when Saul dies. We see Saul's death. We see the death of three of his sons, Jonathan, Abinadab, and Malchishua. Again, I know nothing of Abinadab or Malchishua. But Jonathan, I think, a righteous man, a friend of David, and unfortunately he is killed in this battle. We see this repeated again in 1 Chronicles chapter 10. And so this particular battle is repeated here in the first half of chapter 10. And in fact, the rest is too. But I think the rest comes after. It's clear that that the next day this kind of thing happens. And that will be after the battle with the Amalekites that David has. So David, in chapter 30, he goes to Ziklag, sees that his home had been raided, goes and attacks the Amalekites, and God tells him, "Everything that you have will be returned to you without any issues." And so he receives all those things back, he inquires of the Lord. And we see in chapter 30 that Abiathar is with him, the priest, at this time. And he brings the ephod, he talks with him, and God talks with David, and he is brought to understand that he will have his possessions returned, and his wives, and everything like that. So that happens in this case. And in the latter half of chapter 30, David distributes all the spoils that he has gotten to his friends in Judah and all over the place, in fact. And so this likely endears him to the Israelites who had just lost this major defeat, major battle with the Philistines. And so who's going to be the next king? How about the guy who gave us all this stuff? But that doesn't exactly happen, and we'll see that probably next week. I do want to finish up chapter 31 of 1 Samuel. We see that on the next day, the Philistines saw that Saul had died, and Jonathan and his sons, and they take their bodies and desecrate their bodies. And then Saul's body is recovered and burned by those in Jabesh-Gilead. Do you remember what happened earlier on in Saul's reign with Jabesh-Gilead? So, all the way in chapter 11, I believe, of 1 Samuel. This is before he even becomes king, before he's coronated. Because that's at the end of chapter 11. The Ammonites go up against Jabesh-Gilead, and they're like, who's going to save us? We're going to contact some people. Maybe they'll save us from the Ammonites. And so Saul is like, all right, I'll do it. So he goes up and he defeats the Ammonites. And and his power, his kingship is secured by that point. People were doubting whether or not he should be king because this was the first king. They'd never done this before. So he solidifies that at the end of chapter 11, or by the end of chapter 11, and becomes king. He's coronated there in chapter 11. All right. So Jabesh-Gilead wants to honor Saul, and so they bring him and bury his body. All right. And then we see that Mephibosheth is made lame. In 2 Samuel chapter 4, verse 4, we see that when they heard that Saul had died, the nurse was afraid for Mephibosheth's life because he is in the line with Saul. So she runs, tries to escape, trips, falls, and Mephibosheth is made lame. So that happens in this time as well. All right, we'll finish talking about the aftermath of Saul's death in 2 Samuel chapters 1 and 2. And then we'll start talking about David's reign next week. Fun times. Any comments or questions before we finish? Very good.